You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
The tragedies of Haiti seem unending. The monstrous earthquake at the beginning of this year, and now, as we speak, a hurricane has left flooding in the still almost totally unreconstructed rubble of January's earthquake. Amidst and magnifying these natural tragedies is the enduring political machination, particularly of foreign powers. And among these current machinations are the elections, legislative and presidential, scheduled for November 28th. To discuss the elections, I'm joined by Nicole Phillips in San Francisco. She's a staff attorney with the Institute for Democracy and Justice in Haiti. She also is assistant director of Haiti programs at the San Francisco University School of Law. It's another appalling day in Haiti, but thank you for taking time to speak with us, Nicole, on Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Who wants these November elections?
The Haitian government wants the elections, those that are currently in power, President Préval's government. The international community wants these elections. There's probably some Haitians who do want the elections, but the majority of Haitians that we've spoken to, a lot of them poor Haitians living in camps, do not want these elections.
There are how many candidates running for president?
19.
19 candidates. Well, what about the people who don't want the elections? You mentioned the people in the camps in particular. Why don't they want them?
I don't think that they, first of all, they have some immediate concerns. Their immediate concerns are the lack of food in the camps, the lack of availability of food, the lack of work, the lack of potable drinking water. A lot of them are still living under tarps that are wearing thin, and they do not have transitional or permanent shelter. So they're really concerned about their immediate needs. But they also don't see these elections as changing at all their circumstances. They see the same system in place that has failed them in the past, and that if you get new people in government, new leaders, that they don't think that that's going to change anything, that they will have to deal with the exact same problems. Another issue is that one of the largest political parties in Haiti, Famille Lavalas, has been excluded from both the presidential and parliamentary elections. So that is the political party of the masses, the popular political party, and without their participation, it would be like not having the Liberal Party participate in elections in Canada and having people go out and vote. There just wouldn't be, a mass wanting to vote. So that's also one of the problems. But I think really it's people feeling very far away from the political system, feeling very sort of left in the camps, forgotten in the camps, and that these elections do not affect them is how people are feeling.
And there must be, as a consequence of the earthquake and the lack of significant reconstruction, almost impossible hurdles about registration, where people would vote. All those apparatus of voting must also be dysfunctional, or am I wrong about that?
No, you're absolutely right about that. There's been some reporting that said that unless major steps are made to, for instance, there's been over 200,000 people, or as many as 200,000 people have died in the earthquake, and so the registration lists need to be updated to see who has died and who hasn't. The potential for fraudulent elections is huge. As you can imagine, it would be pretty easy to pay somebody just a few dollars to vote twice or three times or more times, given sort of the desperation of folks. So that's a big issue, where polling stations are. A lot of them have been destroyed in the earthquake. A lot of people that were registered at certain polling stations, they're now displaced. They're living somewhere else. Where do they go vote? As well as, like you say, registration cards. A lot of people have lost their registration cards. There's over 3 million people were affected by the earthquake. 1.5 million remain displaced by this earthquake. So a lot of them have left their crumbling homes or were on the streets when the earthquake happened and have none of their possessions. So a lot of people don't have their identity cards that they would need in order to vote.
Even before the earthquake in 2009, there was an election, and because of the exclusion of the most popular party then too, the Famille Lavalas, there was a call for a boycott of the election because of that exclusion. What sort of percentage of people voted in that election in pre-earthquake, Katie?
Yeah, that's a great question. The international community recorded about 3 to 5% of the people voted. The Haitian government declared about 10%. But whether you take the 3% or the 10%, it's still extraordinarily low. Haiti generally does have a much higher voter turnout than that. And that was a call for the fact that Famille Lavalas was not allowed to participate in those elections. And unfortunately, the Electoral Council just rolled over that decision to exclude political party into these elections in November this year.
We've sort of referred to the consequences of the earthquake, the huge number of internally displaced people living in camps and so on. I guess the obvious question that arises, billions of dollars have been pledged for aid. Why is it that in Haiti as though the earthquake just happened yesterday?
Well, that's something that I think a lot of people, especially Haitians living in the camps, are wondering. They know, although a lot of them don't have internet access, they know that millions and billions of dollars have been pledged and they're not seeing it. And they're wondering why. And as you can imagine, they're pretty angry about it right now. I think one of the easiest answer, unfortunately, is that most of the aid that has been pledged has not arrived. The U.S. government is one of the biggest problems with this. There's $1.15 billion that they have pledged, and that which is supposed to arrive, and that has not made it out of Congress, unfortunately. So that's being held up. Canada itself has pledged $380 million for aid and reconstruction. As of September, only about 25% of that money had actually been sent. I think now there might have been an increase since then. My figures are September. But as you can see, I think in general the estimates right now are about 38% of what was supposed to be given for 2010 has been spent, has arrived in Haiti. So the reconstruction efforts really, it's hard for them to take off the ground because the money is not there. And of course, billions of dollars have also been pledged to international non-governmental organizations, aid relief organizations. And there are some figures that's not quite as transparent. It's difficult to track what non-governmental organizations are doing. But as far as we can tell, a small fraction of what they've received for earthquake recovery has also been spent, which I think raises some questions about accountability as well.
So there are two stages here where the question of pledging is actually delivered, but then what happened, how much of that is actually allocated in terms of reconstruction, rehabilitation?
The Haiti Interim Reconstruction Commission, which is headed by the Prime Minister Jean-Marc Bellerive, as well as former U.S. President Bill Clinton, oversees that commission, and so they're deciding what projects go forward with the money that's being allocated, and they've only met three times. So there has been some money allocated for reconstruction, but unfortunately not enough. And I think probably if you were to speak with President Clinton, he would express frustration at the lack of funds that are coming in from the international community that has been pledged. It certainly is making his job a bit more difficult. But one of the things that's really apparent about this commission is that those who sit on the commission, besides a lot of members of the international community, I think about 50% of those who sit on that reconstruction commission are from the international community, but also it's a lot of sort of large land holders in Haiti. It's the elite. And so what you don't see on that commission are the voices of the vast majority of Haitians, of poor Haitians. These meetings are all conducted in English. Of course, 80% of Haitians speak only Haitian Creole. They don't even speak French. So really another, I think, impediment to the recovery has been the lack of bringing in the Haitian voice and listening to what their needs are and strengthening them, empowering them in this reconstruction process.
A recent report in the Canadian press on a little different dimension, but of the consequences of the earthquake, Canada pledged to help family reunification, Haitians who have family in Canada. And the statistic that was given in the press report was that there were 8,354 people in Haiti applying for family reunification, and up to now the Canadian government has accepted 18 out of more than 8,000. So that's sort of a sense of where our government's at, I guess.
Well, and that really raises the question. Of course, we've got some similar problems happening in the United States. We're sort of famous for keeping Haitians in Guantanamo for periods of time. Our immigration policies have not been great either. But that really begs the question, why not? Why is the Canadian government not accepting family reunification in a society where we really value family solidarity? Why are we not allowing Haitians in who clearly are in desperate need? And if this similar problem happened in England or in Spain, would we be so cautious to let these folks in? And I think it's something we really need to start asking ourselves and asking members of Parliament.
Between the earthquake and the hurricane, there's been news of a cholera epidemic. Is this another natural disaster, or is it another consequence of political machinations?
Well, I think all of this. I mean, when you take into account the fact that the earthquake in Chile, was 500 times stronger, and the fact that they had only a small fraction of the amount of casualties that Haiti did, the hurricane is going all over. You know, it's now only a tropical storm, but it has passed through and did not cause nearly the devastation that it has in Haiti. So whenever you mention these types of natural disasters, clearly Mother Nature has not been kind to Haiti this year. But at the same time, there is a breakdown in policies that has allowed Haiti to be so vulnerable to these natural disasters. With the cholera, it's very similar. There's an investigation ongoing about the cause of the cholera. Haiti has not seen cholera for over 100 years, if ever. And so they think that the strain of cholera has come from a Southeast Asian strain. There are a lot of UN peacekeeping forces from that region where this strain of cholera is from. There's some allegations that perhaps it came from the MINUSTA peacekeeping troop. That has not been confirmed at all. But if the housing situation in the camps wasn't so dire, if there were adequate housing available, if there were ditches so that rain could go into these ditches, one of the biggest problems with the hurricane is we're afraid of all the flooding. That means all the toilets, any type of waste is going to be flooded and be mixing in with where people are living, sleeping, eating, and drinking. And so if the international community had properly responded and had been able to provide adequate housing, if the Haitian government had also responded, then we wouldn't be in this circumstance right now where we have 440 confirmed deaths of cholera, over close to 7,000 Haitians have been hospitalized or treated for cholera, and we think that there are probably thousands and thousands of more people who are carrying it, and we just don't know how big this epidemic is going to become.
One of Haiti's most respected human rights activists, Mario Joseph, has said that the Haitian political system is broken. What is a superior alternative to going through the motions of an election that Haitians don't want and won't participate in?
What Mario is asking for is that right now the international community, with the $29 million that we're pledging to pay for these elections, that rather than spending that money, and I will say I think it's close to $6 million that the Canadian government is spending on these elections, rather than spending that money on the elections, take those resources as well as time and focus on providing the basic living survival needs for Haitians in the camp. Under the Haitian law, you're able to have a provisional government that can take over for a period of time in a state of emergency. Mario was saying this is a state of emergency. The current government can continue, and in the meantime, what we need is more dialogue. We need to bring in the popular voice. Of course, one of the biggest ways of bringing in the popular voice would be to have Famuyiwa Valasa, the political party of the popular voice, to participate in these elections. So the voices of popular Haitians has been completely eliminated. But Mario is saying, you know, we've tried to get that political parties to be able to participate over and over again. They've been excluded, but we need to go a step further. We need to make sure that there is some type of dialogue that perhaps can be facilitated by the international community to really change the system that is creating all these bad policies. If you change the people, it's not necessarily going to change the system.
Well, thank you very much, Nicole, for joining us. We appreciate it a great deal.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nicole Phillips in San Francisco. She's a staff attorney with the Institute for Democracy and Justice in Haiti. She also is assistant director of Haiti programs at the San Francisco University School of Law. And there's going to be a meeting on the current situation in Haiti. This meeting in Vancouver will be Tuesday, November 16th at 7:30 p.m. at Mount Pleasant Community Center. And it will have reports from people with firsthand observations of the current situation.